Okay, I guess I forgot to get the record button. But anyway, okay, tonight's topic, we're going to look at EMPs, and we're going to look at also bonds for winds. But first, let's pick up where we left off last week with our scripture reading. We're reading in the Gospel of Luke, and we're in, let me change the screen here.
Do you want to announce the date and time again?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. All right, well, I'll tell you what. Let me just go quickly through that. Okay, welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, February 21st, 2022. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week on our scripture reading. We're in the Gospel of Luke, let's see, it's being read by Alexander Scorby. So the Gospel of Luke, chapter 23.
Chapter 23. And the whole multitude of them arose and led him unto Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, We found this fellow perverting the nation, and forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king. And Pilate asked him, saying, Art thou the king of the Jews? And he answered him and said, Thou sayest it. Then said Pilate to the chief priests and to the people, I find no fault in this man. And they were the more fierce, saying, He stirreth up the people, teaching throughout all Jewry, beginning from Galilee to this place. When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked whether the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged unto Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was at Jerusalem at that time. And when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceeding glad, for he was desirous to see him of a long season, because he had heard many things of him. And he hoped to have seen some miracle done by him. Then he questioned with him in many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. And Herod, with his men of war, set him at naught and mocked him, and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him again to Pilate. And the same day Pilate and Herod were made friends together, for before they were at enmity between themselves. And Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people, said unto them, Ye have brought this man unto me as one that perverteth the people. And behold, I, having examined him before you, have found no fault in this man touching those things whereof ye accuse him. No, nor yet Herod, for I sent you to him. And lo, nothing worthy of death is done unto him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. For of necessity he must release one unto them at the feast. And they cried out all at once, saying, Away with this man, and release unto us Barabbas, who for a certain sedition made in the city, and for murder was cast into prison. Pilate therefore, willing to release Jesus, spake again to them. But they cried, saying, Crucify him, crucify him. And he said unto them the third time, Why, what evil hath he done? I have found no cause of death in him. I will therefore chastise him, and let him go. And they were instant with loud voices, requiring that he might be crucified. And the voices of them and of the chief priests prevailed. And Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they required. And he released unto them him that for sedition and murder was cast into prison, whom they had desired, but he delivered Jesus to their will. And as they led him away, they laid hold upon one Simon, a Cyrenian, coming out of the country, and on him they laid the cross, that he might bear it after Jesus. And there followed him a great company of people and of women, which also bewailed and lamented him. But Jesus, turning unto them, said, Daughters of Jerusalem, weep not for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming in the which they shall say, Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bear, and the paps which never gave suck. Then shall they begin to say to the mountains, Fall on us, and to the hills, Cover us. For if they do these things in a green tree, what shall be done in the dry? And there were also two other malefactors led with him to be put to death. And when they were come to the place which is called Calvary, there they crucified him and the malefactors, one on the right hand and the other on the left. Then said Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they parted his raiment and cast lots. And the people stood beholding. And the rulers also with them derided him, saying, He saved others, let him save himself, if he be Christ, the chosen of God. And the soldiers also mocked him, coming to him and offering him vinegar, and saying, If thou be the king of the Jews, save thyself. And a superscription also was written over him in letters of Greek and Latin and Hebrew, This is the king of the Jews. And one of the malefactors which were hanged railed on him, saying, If thou be Christ, save thyself and us. But the other answering rebuked him, saying, Dost not thou fear God, seeing thou art in the same condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we receive the due reward of our deeds, but this man hath done nothing amiss. And he said unto Jesus, Lord, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. And Jesus said unto him, Verily I say unto thee, today shalt thou be with me in paradise. And it was about the sixth hour, and there was a darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. And the sun was darkened, and the veil of the temple was rent in the midst. And when Jesus had cried with a loud voice, he said, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And having said thus, he gave up the ghost. Now when the centurion saw what was done, he glorified God, saying, Certainly this was a righteous man. And all the people that came together to that sight, beholding the things which were done, smote their breasts and returned. And all his acquaintance, and the women that followed him from Galilee, stood afar off, beholding these things. And behold, there was a man named Joseph, a counselor, and he was a good man and a just. The same had not consented to the counsel and deed of them. He was of Arimathea, a city of the Jews, who also himself waited for the kingdom of God. This man went unto Pilate and begged the body of Jesus. And he took it down and wrapped it in linen and laid it in a sepulchre that was hewn in stone, wherein never man before was laid. And that day was the preparation, and the Sabbath drew on. And the women also, which came with him from Galilee, followed after, and beheld the sepulchre, and how his body was laid. And they returned, and prepared spices and ointments, and rested the Sabbath day according to the commandment.
Okay, as I mentioned a little earlier, tonight we're going to be looking at two things. I'm going to play a couple of short videos. And one of them, I guess the first one will start off, it should be located under today's issues. I posted these things, I think I started last night, but most of it was really posted and turned on this morning, or today sometime. So here's a new page for us. It's on electromagnetic pulse protection. I was looking to do things that I had to take care of in my own home, and I was going to build some Faraday boxes, I guess you'd call them, or cages. So I was looking into that, and I fell upon this EMP shield, which we're going to talk a little bit about. Now, the second thing we're going to look at is Bond's, let's see what it's actually called. We put that under Start a Committee of Safety, because those are the people that will be dealing with this, is a very, very powerful program called Bonds for the Wind. Now, we have WIN. Now, we have spoken about this. I think we started talking a little bit about it 2 weeks ago, and last week we spoke very little about it. And since then, I started looking into it and breaking things down. We did create a page on this with a focus back to Bonds for the Wind. I think it's bondsforthewind.com, but we'll find out in a minute. We do have links to that. They've got some really vital information for us. But what I'm going to do first is I'm going to first play two short videos. They're about 2 minutes long each. And I want to talk a little bit about that. And then we're going to play another short video. I think it's 14 minutes on Wind for the Bonds. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. So if anybody has any questions or comments on these two issues as we're going through this, you can jump into the queue. To get into the queue, hit a star 6 and a 1, and you'll be in the queue, and we'll take you for Q&A, questions or comments. Okay, electromagnetic pulse protection. Again, you'll find this under today's issues, the first link down, electromagnetic pulse protection. And basically, there's no need for a Faraday cage. I was totally blown away from that. They have a device that you can put onto your home, and it protects anything that's plugged into your home will be protected from any kind of a solar flare or an EMP or even a lightning strike. It'll protect everything in your home. They also make one for a vehicle. And same thing, if you get hit with an EMP or a solar flare, your vehicle will be protected and it won't be burnt out. And the same thing with generator protection. So I myself am looking to purchase all three and put it, because I have, of course, my home and a vehicle and also a generator, and I want to protect everything. You still need to get a Faraday cage for smaller items. For instance, your cell phone, maybe a camera, anything electronics, batteries, okay? And we'll write some information up on that. I did get some good information on that. And you can use a metal trash can, which is a galvanized trash can. You can get a Home Depot, Lowe's, or any of those other places, any kind of a lumber place you can get them. And the key thing for that is to line that with cardboard. And the bottom and the top, there's some video on how to do that, how to wrap things. I'm going to try to locate that video and put it up on this page so people can know how to do that. But basically what you have to do is you have to wrap the interior of your trash can with cardboard. And then you want to put everything that you're putting into there in individual plastic bags and seal it up, or a box and seal it up. And then wrap that with tin foil and lay it inside. When an EMP, when a solar flare goes off, we got about 13 to 14 hours to respond before it actually hits the Earth. Solar flares, they travel at approximately 7 million miles an hour. And the sun is 93 million miles away, so it works out to be about 13 hours. And if a solar flare does go off and it's heading our way, I'm sure they'll be blasting on every news, every radio, anywhere you can think of, you'll be hearing about this. So you'll have plenty of time to put those items into a protective Faraday cage. And again, the cost is about $30 for a Faraday cage. You can just go out and get a galvanized trash can with a lid. Unfortunately, with an EMP, we probably wouldn't get any warning for that at all. So you would lose everything that's not plugged into your home. But at least your home and anything plugged in, your computer, TV, different items, they'll all be protected by this device. And the same thing with the generator and also, of course, your vehicle. The three most important things. This also works for an apartment. If you're in an apartment and you plug this into your, because every apartment, I used to live in an apartment many years ago when I lived in New York City, and every apartment had a fuse box there. So you could install it on your fuse box. You just have to find out where the fuse box is. It could be in the basement if you're renting an apartment, or it could be actually in your apartment somewhere. So you can put it in your own apartments and your vehicles and so on. So I strongly suspect everyone to look into this and consider purchasing it. It's pretty inexpensive. What I did is I signed up as a reseller. So there's a link on this page, and if you click on it, you get $50 off. Use the coupon, which will be automatic off the link. And so you'll get $50 off, and then when you do whatever you purchase, NLA would get 15% of the purchase. And that, of course, goes to support NLA's effort to save the Republic. So let's play the two videos, and then we'll go to the next subject, and then we'll open up for some conversation. So the two videos, and you can watch these videos again at a later time. We're going to play this first video, which is protecting your home, second one to protect your car. Now, there is a third video up here. Where is it? Did it up here? Okay, no, it's not here. Is it here? No, that's it on this. On the other one, I have three videos, but four videos. So let's play this video first. Like I said, they're only a couple of minutes, 2 minutes long.
Hey, everybody. I'm Andrew from EMP Shield, and today I'm excited to show you our new technology, the world's first whole home EMP protection device.
With over 37 models that can be used around the world, our family of EMP protection devices installs easily in minutes. Being employed this year by federal organizations and electrical companies, the EMP Shield is tested at Keystone Compliance, a federally approved DoD testing facility. Also serving as one of the world's fastest whole home surge protection devices, working in less than 1 nanosecond, the EMP Shield will protect against electromagnetic pulses, coronal mass ejections, lightning, and all forms of power surges. Proven to withstand more than 40 EMP strikes with zero degradation, the EMP Shield is also one of the world's strongest surge protectors, capable of withstanding over 100,000 amps.
So, thank you so much for watching. Please be sure to like our video and post any comments you have down below. We're sure you guys are going to have quite a few questions, so our engineers are going to be on standby to answer any questions you may have. Most importantly, be sure to share our video, as we're sure your friends are also going to be interested in our new technology. Help us get an EMP Shield into every house in America. Thanks again for watching. Bye.
Okay, the second video is on the car.
Hey, everybody. I'm Andrew from EMP Shield, and today Patrick and I are going to be installing our device into a vehicle from the Coffee County Sheriff's Department. Thanks for watching. The first step to installing the EMP Shield is to find a spot inside your engine compartment that you will place the device. The shield comes with industrial strength hook and loop fasteners, so you will need to clean that area thoroughly. Place the EMP Shield in the clean location and press and hold the shield in place. Be sure to place the EMP Shield in a location where you'll be able to see the green light. After measuring how much cable you will need to reach the positive terminal on the battery, wrap any excess cable and use small zip ties to keep the excess wire secured. Next, loosen and remove the nut from the positive terminal, as this is where the red wire will connect. Often, a battery will show red or a plus sign to indicate where the positive terminal is. Place the connector of the red wire on the positive terminal and tighten the nut to keep the wires in place. This is how it should look if you've properly installed the positive wire. Next, we will install ground wire, which is the green wire. Install this wire to any piece of metal inside the engine compartment that attaches to the chassis of the vehicle. This wire installs in a similar fashion to the positive wire, as you'll loosen a nut, place the wire in the correct location, and then tighten the nut securely. The last step of this installation is to install the negative wire, which is the black wire. This wire will go on the negative side of the battery, which often has the minus sign as its symbol. To install this wire will be very similar to the positive wire. You'll loosen the nut, place the connector down, and then tighten the nut firmly. This is how this police vehicle's final installation looks with the positive, negative, and ground wire. If everything's been installed correctly, you'll be able to see the green light on the device, which means that the device is actively protecting your vehicle. To learn more about our EMP protection devices for your home, vehicle, solar system, generator, and ham radio systems, ask us any questions you may have, read about EMP protection in our EMP library, to check out articles about EMP protection, or to just read the reviews that other people have written about our devices, go to empshield.com. Thanks so much for watching. Bye.
Okay, and again, you can purchase this these items through us. Well, actually, you know, through them, of course, but going through our webpage, all you do is click on Order Now, and you'll go to a page. You'll see that it'll be giving us a credit up here, NLA, and that's a coupon that's attached to this purchase here, and you'll get $50 off the price. If you did go to the site directly, you'd pay the full price, but you can put a coupon in there. If you put NLA in there, you'll get the $50 discount. So hopefully people will go out and buy this. It's an item. I was so blown away and happy to find this because I was trying to prepare my house for this potential emergency, that, which one day is coming. I mean, lightning strikes can happen at any time. Solar flare, really, we just had a certain problem. Fortunately, with the sun, fortunately, it was going a different direction, didn't come towards the earth. But the day's coming, and it will eventually happen, and we're going to lose a lot of electrical items, electronic items. Whether they're plugged in or not, it's going to be destroyed. They're going to be fried. Now, interesting, of course, you know, the government has done nothing to protect our grid. And they've known about this problem for quite some time, you know. And it was Trump, when he became president in 2017, one of the first things he did, he set forth the motion of investigation for what we can do to protect the grid, and that's how this came about. You can read the paper. There is a report on this, and it's, you can click on it right here. It's click here for the report. It's the DHS EMP. Protection Resilient Guidelines, and it's unclassified PDF, and you can read the government report on this item. And since 2019, I believe at least, unless it started earlier than that, but 2019 is when they started to sell towards the home and, you know, for the private individual. But the government, once they came to understand this process and this particular protection device, already started protecting our grid, and that has been going on since 2019. In the report, you're going to read about the fact that it's up to, you know, the state, local governments, and even the electrical, you know, for instance, like Central Hudson, the electrical companies. They're really responsible to alert the individuals, the people, to let them know of this problem and that there is a device that you can put onto your home. But they have failed to do that. And I'm really, that's pretty disturbing. But at least our grid is being protected. The word is going out through people like, you know, what we are here at NLA, because we're now trying to push this forward. And, of course, we'll get a few dollars to support the work that we're doing here. But nevertheless, people need to hear about this and know about it and very strongly consider what they're going to do if they're going to protect their home. And of course, obviously, we all should be doing that. There's a lot of other things you could be reading on this. Is information on the protection of the guidelines that we just talked about, but also the EMP Home Shield. You can click on that and is a PDF information on the home, PDF information on the shield, the military testing that's taken place for this particular product, the warranty, the vehicle shield, and how the EMP shield works. Now, all this information is also up on the website, which is for the EMP shield. And again, all you need to do is just click on a link. There's a link here. I think we've got three links on this, one under the videos, and one all the way down on the bottom of the page. This is pretty much how it connects to your electrical box. Pretty simple to connect to the electrical box. There are instructions for all this. They suggest to get an electrician. But anybody who has electrical abilities, you know, they can do it themselves. But it shouldn't be. It's not expensive. It should not be expensive to put this in. It's really just putting a breaker in. It's I believe it's set up with a 20-amp breaker. You put a 20-amp breaker in, attach it to the 20-amp breaker, which is, you know, your positive, and then, of course, you're bringing it over to both sides of, you know, your 100-amp service coming in. You have two legs coming in, two phases. So you put them on one in each phase on that you know, your breaker. And then the other one goes, the third wire, which is green, goes to the ground. But again, there's three places to click to go to the page and to purchase the items, get more information, purchase the items. So anyway, people should be looking at that and see once what they're going to do. What's going on here? Let's see if I can get my web page back up. Okay, there we go. All right, now the second thing we want to talk about tonight, look at, and anybody have any questions or comments on this particular item, feel free to get into the queue, *6 and 1. I can answer some of the questions, but I'm still learning more about this, and I haven't gone through everything yet. But let's go to our next thing, which is an extremely important thing, and the committees of safety, you know, we need to give them as many tools as possible. And, of course, everybody should be starting a committee of safety within their counties. And it's imperative that we do this. If we expect to be free, we need to. It's going to cost us, and it's going to cost us our time and a little bit of our money. And if you're not willing to do it, then maybe we don't deserve liberty. Liberty does not protect itself. Yeah, we codified our liberty to some degree with the Bill of Rights, but we got to protect it, and that of course is the purpose ultimately, the bottom line of the Second Amendment. necessary for the free state is, of course, the right to bear arms. But anyway, let's go over here to now the second thing we're going to be looking into tonight real quickly is bonds for the win. Now, I haven't been through everything on this yet either, and I'm still continuing, but I have gone through the videos. It looks very simple, and I've gone through a lot of the website, and I also strongly suggest everybody do that, because once you get your committees of safety going, this is so powerful, so powerful. And let me tell you, I'm in court right now with a federal judge, and I'm ready to, I'm in federal court, and I'm going after a federal judge and a U.S. attorney, and also another bar attorney. They committed fraud on the court. They committed criminal actions. They violated my right of due process. They've hidden the court process that we're in. They refused to tell me what jurisdiction. Lots and lots of problems in this case, all on the record. And I've been kind of waiting to file my final paper, which really is go to sue the court, because I don't have to take this into any kind of an appellate process. Under common law, you can sue a lower court directly, and that's a lower court. Any court that operates under administrative processes, which is what they operate, codes and statutes, regulations, that has nothing to do with me. That's a court that's a lower court, and so a higher court has the ability to sue a lower court in opposed to going through a an appellate process. I never agreed to go into an administrative court or a contractual court or anything of that nature. I opened a court of record. But in any event, I'm getting ready to file those papers, and I realize, we've spoken about doing bonds, but we've never pursued it. And now that we actually have the information on how to pursue it and how to do it and how to deal with it, I'm also going to pull those bonds on. I'm going to file a letter of intent to draw their bonds from the judge and the U.S. attorney, particularly. I don't think the bar attorney is required to have a bond. Even though he's an officer of the court, you would imagine that he should be required to have a bond. I'll have to look into that. So maybe lawyers, bar attorneys do have bonds. I don't know if Brent's here and if he's listening in at the moment, but maybe he can tell us whether bar attorneys have bonds or not. But they certainly should. If they're going to be called the officers of the court and therefore gives them a responsibility for the people, then absolutely they should be having bonds. And if they do, we're going to pull those bonds too. We're going to send letters of what we're considering doing, what they call letters of intent is what it's called. So anyway, there are three videos here. I'm only going to play one video. I'm going to play the first video, obtaining the bond. Next week I might play serve a letter of intent, and then the third one is filing the claim. So it's a three-step process. Now, there is another video, which I don't see here, and I'm going to get it up here. It should be right here. I'll put a fourth video up here. The video is about an hour and 10 or an hour and 15 minutes long. No, let me take this back. It is the other place where that video belongs. I remember now because of the content of the information. So if you go over to back to electrical magnetic pulse protector, there is a third video, and that third video, which I'll put under here, and I'll try to do that tomorrow morning. That third video answers a lot of questions on everything about this product. It even works with pacemaker. If you have a pacemaker. Not that it works with a pacemaker, but the question was asked, well, what about a pacemaker? It turns out that the newest pacemakers that are out there in the market, unless it's a very old pacemaker, they're already protected for this kind of a thing. So it kind of exists for that. But not that this product does anything for that, but that question was asked, and they did answer that. But they asked a lot of questions, and it was a real good Q&A. And the two individuals that run the company selling this product, they've answered all these questions, and I was very impressed. It protects a lot. It really is a great product to, in order to protect your home for these EMPs. Okay, so real quick, we're going to play this video. It's about 10 minutes long, maybe 11 minutes at the most. And just to give kind of an introduction, we're going to play on one, which is obtaining the bond. And then after that, anybody has any questions or comments concerning these subject matters, by all means get into the Q*601. Okay,
Hey guys, so it's been long awaited. We're going to give you a step-by-step approach on how to file a claim against an elected official's surety bond. I'm going to start with step one, and then I'll do a separate video for each step. But the very first step, there's only three steps. The first is to obtain their bond and their oath of office. The second step is to send a letter of intent and serve them, you know, basically with the intent to file a claim against their surety bond. The third step is to actually file a claim if they do not meet your demands. So let's start with step one. Step one is sending in what we're calling a FOIA request, but to be really technical, the Freedom of Information Act does apply, but not in every state. So when you do request this bond from your elected or appointed official, you should use one of our letters on our website. And I'm going to share that with you right now. So I'm going to share my screen. And I'll show you that under our in our website, bondsforthewin.com, you'll go under Surety Bonds Step-by-Step Guide. Now, this guide is going to show you all the same information that I'm giving you right now. Okay? So step one, step two, step three. It's very, very cleanly organized. But if you click on this bond request letter examples, or when you look at this expansion here, send a bond request letter. A lot of people call this a FOIA request. What we have is we have sample letters for every single state. And in your state, you know, what we do is we ask these individuals, so you send this via mail. You can send it via certified mail. If you want to guarantee it gets there, you can send it via registered mail if you want them to sign for it, or you can send it via email. I recommend starting with all three or just sending them an email. But what we've done is we've given you the perfect letter. So we know that sometimes they call these policies something different in each state and or each county. So we've literally included every possible way that they might, you know, every possible naming convention they might use for these types of policies. And we're also asking them for the oath of office, okay? Now, in each state, you have a specific set of state statutes that are defined in your laws. So we reference those state statutes on this list for your state. That's why we've got these organized by state. Once you send out your first letter, it gets easier from there. I think some people don't realize it's just start sending letters. The more letters you send out, the better. As in, so let's say you're going after the district board of directors. Well, and by the way, do not go after the schools. Go after the district board of directors. They're the elected officials. They're the ones pushing these mandates and these draconian rules. So basically, you're going to send a letter via email to every single person on the board. Because they're an elected official, they should know who they're bonded through. Even if they're under a blanket policy, they should provide you with their blanket policy or direct you on where to go to obtain this bond. But just understand, they might not actually have their own direct policy. As a matter of fact, most of the board of directors are sitting under a blanket policy. So you send a FOIA request. I'm just calling it that, guys. Remember, we cite FOIA, Sunshine Act, and state laws, so don't worry about it. We're just calling it a FOIA request. You'll download that one letter. It's just one letter. And you'll send that to everyone on your board of directors for your district. And then you're going to send that to all of your county commissioners. So you're going to look up your county and the board of commissioners. Those are the people that make these decisions for all the districts. So you will get every district if you serve your board of county commissioners. Okay? So what I did was I sent out a FOIA request to all the counties, or at least 10 counties. We only have 13 here, but if you send it out to all the counties, or 10 or more, what will happen is you'll get one back, and or they'll point you in the right direction. But usually this is the department that has to have the bonds for all the districts in their county. So if you send out the 10 letters and you get one back, that means you now have leverage with all the others. So you can be like, well, so-and-so provided this, and why is she providing it? Are you breaking the law? And da da da. We are about to post a form on our website where you can notify us if there's someone who's breaking the law. This is it's breaking the law. If they don't provide this information under the Freedom of Information Act, if they don't provide, and because it's called public records, just like if they go into a board meeting, they have to record it because it's public record. They have to provide you with this documentation. They serve us. They are our elected servants. They're public servants, guys. They're serving us. They are holding the liability for our children. Our children. Remember that. And don't hold up. I mean, it's not hard to send a letter. It's not hard to send an email. So send as many as you can. As you can. I would recommend sending a certified FOIA request through certified mail to every board of commissioners, which are your counties, in your state, if you can, because likely they're carrying a policy. Now, the next step, if you're not getting anywhere with those, go after the risk management department. Now, the risk management department, you guys, this is an entire department designed to block you from filing a claim against their surety bond. What they'll do is when you go to actually file a claim, we're learning, and we're going to help you bypass this. They'll try to intercept it, and they'll try to act like they're claims adjusters, but they're not. These, oftentimes, though, it's good to go after and FOIA request the risk management department, because they're the ones who also are responsible for setting up these bonds and these policies on behalf of all the districts in their county. So I would first go after the individuals. I would also send out a request for all the board of commissioners. But after that, I would then go ahead and go to the risk management department. And if you still cannot get a hold of your bond in your area, definitely check out our website, because we are posting a take action section. And we've obtained bonds in so many counties and cities now. You can literally just bypass this whole step one and sign up on our contact us form, and we'll reach out to you, and we'll direct you on what to do for step two. So if you can't find your bond, one, report it to us because they're breaking the law. Two, go ahead and check on our website to see if we already have your state posted. Three, join your state Telegram channel. If you go to our website, again, I'm going to share my screen. If you go to our website on the Contact Us page under Telegram State Groups, we have a separate Telegram channel for every state and every Canadian province. So if you want, join your local Telegram group and find out who has collected bonds so far and how they're finding success, what letters they're using to find that success, what insurance carrier your state tends to be using. You'd be surprised how many people have been at this already for the last month and how much progress they're making. So even if you're not making progress getting hold of these policies, get it from these guys. Now, if you do get a policy, let's say you do get an insurance policy, just so everyone understands this, these individuals need to be licensed, bonded, and insured. Really, they have to have their oath of office, they have to be bonded, and they have to be insured. But some of these people have been lied to about their bonding process. In other words, their handlers told them, oh, we've just got a liability policy for you. You're covered. Well, deep in that liability policy, there is a surety bond section, and it doesn't say that because, again, it's all in the fine print. It'll say to them, people can file a claim against your liability insurance policy, and we'll cover you for it for $9 million, but with a $5 million deductible, which is a bond. Okay, so do you understand they manipulated these elected officials into taking this role, and they told them they had all the power in the world, but they don't. They're taking personal liability. And when we call them out on their personal liability, they will back off. And what we really want is for the state boards, district boards, to turn on their state board of education just like they did in Illinois and basically say, you guys are coercing us to break the law, because these are laws. They are practicing. These districts are being forced to practice medicine without a license. This is a complete violation of due process and your rights, your citizens' rights. So, okay, so you're going to send out FOIA requests. You're going to try to get your super. Oh, in most states and counties, the superintendents are required to have their own bond. So definitely email them directly and mail them directly. The superintendents and the assistant superintendents, they are required to have their own bond, and oftentimes the treasurers as well, and the sheriffs. The sheriffs are usually required to have their own bond. So when they tell you they don't have to, they're wrong. they're wrong. They're lying to you, and you should cite, you should report them to us because this is insurance fraud. So you're going to send out FOIA requests to your entire board and your state board, your county board of commissions. If you're not getting anywhere there, try to reach out to the county risk management departments. If you're not getting anywhere there, check out online, join your state groups, get active, try to figure out how other people are doing it. We also had someone find a lot of success by calling up all the insurance agents in the county. So you can reach out to these insurance people, and they're willing to talk. Say, have the districts been calling you on a regular basis trying to set up bond policies? Because what we're finding out in Washington is that the districts will say, oh, no, we don't have to be bonded, we don't have bond. And then they get off the phone, either they're being called or they're being emailed, they get off the phone and they immediately call an agent. And a lot of these policies are being back paid. Like, as in, our underwriters are seeing that on some of these liability policies, they're back paying to like 1998. So why would you go to an insurance company and pay $1,000 a month premium for back pay for 27 plus years? Why would you do that? Either you're trying to show you had coverage, or you're trying to clean your record, or you're trying to send them bribe money so that they don't take any claims. Well, guess what? We're about to have thousands upon thousands of claims piling up on these insurance companies, and they have to resolve the situation like a mediator. If we don't get our demands, then we just have to hold these claims. So anyway, that's step one. I hope that gives you guys some good information on what to do. And I will continue with step two in the next video. All right, guys, thanks.
Okay, that brings us to the end of the videos for tonight. Again, next week I think we're going to look at serving a letter of intent, and then the following week we'll look at filing the claim. And again, they're short videos. They're only about 10 minutes long. One of the things tonight, I forgot quite a few things. Usually I do, and I didn't do it tonight. But Terry, do we have any questions, or is Jan here? Or is Jan still traveling?
Well, we don't have any questions tonight, except for Nikki. She asked if you would play that 1 3-minute video that I dropped in your box.
Which, yeah. Skype box?
Yeah. Yes, I think I did it in Skype.
Well, let me. What's it about?
No, I didn't do it in Skype. No. I sent it to you on email then.
Oh, okay. I can't open my email right now. What's it about? Do you know?
Yeah, it's a scene, a hearing scene against a board from God Is Not Dead, and it's We the People, and he talks about where
the... We'll play that next week. It's only a few minutes, no problem. We'll play that. It
sounds like no other questions.
And there's no announcements?
No, I haven't seen any announcements.
Okay. All right, so we'll go to the queue now, take some questions, if anybody has any questions or comments. There's only one person in the queue at the moment.
And Brent is here.
And Brent is here, okay. Hey, Brent, I'll ask you a question when it's ready to go to your turn, so I'll hang on for a second. All right, let's take some questions. We're going to spend the next 10 minutes or so taking whatever questions come up, and then we'll move over to Brent, and then Gerard will take up from there. But the first person in the queue is Charlotte from Hawaii, and it doesn't necessarily have to be on the subjects we talked about tonight. It could be on any subject that we're dealing with, particularly the things of the Committees of Safety, which deals with the political problems and the judicial problems within our government and how we take control of that, the committee man process and so on. So any questions on that area that we're really working with, we're open for tonight. But so let me take the first person, Charlotte from Hawaii. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi, good evening, you guys. I just wanted to throw in there, I've been still trying to do my civics course, and it's still not functioning. So...
Okay. Yeah, we haven't heard anyone else with a problem on civics course, to my knowledge. Is that correct, Terry? Right? We're not getting any complaints from anyone on any of the courses, are we?
I still have one or two, and I'm working on them.
Okay. Usually what it is, did you go through cleaning your cache? There is a process you can go through if you have a question or, you know, a problem with these things. Let me see if I can quickly locate that. Let's see, on the education...
I could show you my screen if it means anything, just because it just... That one, it's been frozen from the beginning of the year, and I did get an email
okay.
from Terry. And,
yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Terry, can you maybe connect with Charlotte this week and maybe share a desktop with you and see if you can't fix that problem or figure out what
yes,
it is?
Yes, I will do that.
Okay. You guys Charlotte. Have each other's information, right?
I'm copying it now.
Okay. All right. Terry will get a hold of you and see once we can, what we can do. There are some things you could do you need to do on your end and, you know, different depending on the browser you have. You know, you have to do one thing on a Firefox or another thing on Microsoft or whatever the case may be. So we'll go through those processes first and then that might solve your problem. But we haven't been here. If anybody's got any problems with our courses, please, by all means, make a complaint to us on it so we can look into this. Right now we're not aware of any serious problems. I'm not sure whether the constitutional course has been reopened. Do you know if that has happened, Terry?
All the courses are open right now. I'm not sure they're all working as advertised, and I kind of have to wait until it goes up. I've done the foundational study. All I could do is answer yes or no at the end, and it goes on to the next one.
Right.
Also, there's a tech support underneath the blue banner on the left. It's on the left of the words below there. There's a tech support, and I do get those.
Okay. And that would be right here on what I'm looking
yes.
at right here, right? Click
yes.
on the tech
fill
support.
Out a form for tech support and give me as much information as you can so I don't have to call you, but I would be happy to call you if you leave me contact.
So you and Carl both are receiving that information, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay, yeah. All right. Is you got that, Charlotte?
I did send several tech supports within January, I believe.
Yeah, the problem was is Carl has an emergency in his life and he hasn't been around, so we're waiting for him to return. Meanwhile, Terry's still starting to handle things.
And I'm kind of fresh at it, Charlotte. I'm sorry I haven't got to you.
No, that's okay. I've just, you know, my heart was to try and get my CivGIS completed this year. It's going to be a mm-hmm. lot of work, so I'm
right.
just trying to, you know, and I thank you guys for who you guys, what are you guys doing. It's pretty cool about knowing the EMP. I thought that was all baloney and junk, but, you know, I guess that's something that got to get pushed, so thank you for the
Absolutely,
knowledge.
Yeah. And again, if people are concerned about the particular product here, there is a report from the government concerning this. This whole thing was researched by the Department of Homeland Security and a few other departments, and it was ordered by President Trump and completed by 2019 and being executed as we speak across our, all of the electrical companies. To the grid to protect our electrical grids because it's really very very alarming that government has just ignored this for all these years, and of course Trump took care of it and took care of business. So, but anyway, yeah, everybody really should consider about doing something, of course, to protect their car and their home, and if they have a generator, you definitely want to protect your generator too. So,
and it's been a blessing because, the Lord, how the Lord works. I'm a licensed electrical contractor here in Hawaii.
Okay. Hey, there you go.
Anyway, Godspeed. Thank you for the time, guys.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's take our next individual here is Linda from Virginia. How you doing, Linda?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, and I did get your email on the letter that you're sending out. That looks pretty good, and make sure, if you haven't sent it yet, just make sure you notarize it, as you do have the notary set up on that, and make sure you set it up with with the certified mail.
Well, can we, there was a couple other things I wanted to discuss. Are you going to be on tomorrow night, or...
Well, I'm not planning unless I have to. Is this something we can cover shortly here, or do we have to set an appointment up to discuss it?
Yeah, we had you had mentioned asking for a bill of particulars.
Okay.
So I didn't know if I should do that now or...
No. The first order of business, because remember, I saw in the letter there, it said something about if you have any questions or problems, write to this person. So I guess that's the person you're writing to. And you're explaining it very carefully, and you also put in all the necessary documents. And now they have to do what they have to do. And if they don't, then you go to the next step. Okay, but I don't think you're going to have to go to the next step because now you're getting, you see, you're dealing with the bureaucrats, and but now you should be dealing with the problem solver here now. And the problem solver will see that they're breaking the law if they continue to push against you. It's unlawful for anybody that claims to have a bill that you owe, and through a bankruptcy, once that's filed, it's against the law for them to pursue that. Once that bankruptcy is over with and filed, so you shouldn't have a problem. I think they're going to correct it at that level. Let's hope.
Well,
fingers crossed. Don't worry about it though, because look at you have plenty of avenues to go from that point forward.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I can't remember. That was the big question, I think. I can't remember if there was any more. I don't have it in front of me, so.
Okay. All right, and once you get anything back on that, then we'll get together and discuss it personally, and we'll open a room up on a Tuesday evening and talk about it.
What was that woman talking about when I came in a little bit late, like 20 minutes? He was talking about the bonds and all that. What was that about?
Wins for bonds. In other words, you can every individual that's in elected office, whether they're elected or appointed, an appointed individual has to. Those individuals have to take an oath, and they have to be bonded, and they have to be insured. And one of the ways you can force them to be obedient to the Constitution is to write a letter of intent to pull their bond, and then go through that process to start pulling it, and you'll start to get their response very quickly. I never, we've been aware of this for quite some time, and we've spoken about it a little bit, but we never dug deeply into it, and I never realized how powerful it really is, because instead of having to take these people to court, or trying to have them removed from office, which you may want to do anyway, but you can do it this way through the bonds, because now they're going to be obedient to the bonds. Now, we're going to be pushing all the people in the committees of safety in the county, wherever they create a committee of safety. This is another tool for them to have. Now, these people are focusing mostly towards the school districts, but this could be used anywhere. And we'll look a little deeper, and we're going to try to make contact with these people if we can't work with them, see what kind of information they could dig up. Since they're working so deeply on it, they may be happy to do this. But to dig up on different levels. So it's not just on the local level and the county level. It also is on the state level and takes you right up into the federal level. And we're thinking of doing this also. I'm thinking of doing this also here in New York with the governor who put a 5-cent bag tax here in New York. So when you go to the store, any paper bag you get, they charge you 5 cents. That's just a runaround on charging tax on food. It's nothing less than that. That's exactly what it is. And that's unlawful.
They're doing the same thing here in Fairfax County.
Yeah, they just can't stop. They just want to make more and more money to line their pockets. It just doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't stop. And I can't wait till the military comes out and puts all these people where they belong, a lot of them at the end of a short rope.
On that bond thing, is that the same as the bonds on the judges?
Everything. Bonds on the judges. I'm going to be exercising that on the judges, and I will include information on the book that I'm writing on court access. Court access, and I think I'm going to name the book Court Access and the Common Law. And in my book, I'm going to put a chapter in there on bonds. Once I work through all this and understand it, I'll make reference to get to that website because they have a tremendous amount of information, and they have a lot of people involved, and they're sharing information, coming together in groups.
Who was that was speaking?
She's one of the individuals that put this together, I presume, with Wins for Bonds.
It's Bonds for the Win.
I wrote that down from...
Yeah, and we will have, I'm pretty sure we have, well, we definitely have a focus towards their site because we put as much information as we can up on our website, we definitely want to not reinvent the wheel, but we want to give as much information and then send people over there so if they need assistance, they can go over there. So there's a tremendous amount of information, but this information is provided by bondsforthewin.com. You click on that link and you'll go right to their website and you can start going through the different information that they have here. So they've got this is really a well put together website. They kept it as simple as possible with maximum information. Well done. And they created all these different groups. You can go under the contact and you can join a Telegram group within your state. You go in here and you can join. And then there'll be groups of people that are working on this problem in your state, and you can share information, get assistance, and then they have an upline workout, from there to the upper tier to get more information and deal with criminal activities, particularly, with these people failing to have bonds and things of that nature. So, but every committee of safety should have someone that really becomes an expert in this particular area. So someone will pick up that job eventually within the county and really get to know how to work the system. Because every problem you have in a county, the first order of business, you go to correct it, and then you let them know, well, okay, we'll send you a letter of intent on your bond and pull your for your bond. And you work from there instead of trying to go to the courts first. Of course, still the committees of safety pick up the committee man process. So they'll be the people who put people on the ballot or take them off, and that's another thing that could be used in order to put these people back under the chains of the Constitution. And then, of course, if it's criminal activity, there also is the grand jury, so we can pursue potential indictments. So. The committees of safety will become so powerful because therein is the way to have government by consent. That is the way, the only way. It's the way our founding fathers did it. It's the way they set it up, and it's been hidden from us for over 200 years. It's time to take it back. Okay.
I had said the same thing about oaths of office a long time ago, but bonds are even better,
Sure. Well, you want both. You want both, oaths of office and... Yeah. We're going to look. I'm going to look further into this. I know Gerard gave some information on this. I was talking with him about it a little earlier, and that is that these people come in and they, if they don't have an oath of office, then they haven't taken their office, and that's an open office. And I believe Gerard was told me a while back. I don't know whether I confirmed this with him this evening, but and he can pipe in as I'm talking if he wants, but. If they don't have an oath, that office is open, and there is a way potentially of seizing that office and taking it away from them, and filling that office up until. But there is a process when that vacancy becomes vacant that someone else. But this is only for the voting process. Another person steps up to take a place. I'm not sure how that works.
I wonder if oaths are even legitimate, if they're worth it, if they have any substance to them.
Of course they do. In a court of law and a court of justice, it has a tremendous amount, okay? Mm-hmm. Look at it. If they violate their oath, depending on the damage that they do, it becomes a criminal thing at some point. I mean, if they
because they were saying some of these, they don't even have oaths of office.
They're not in office. Then they're not in office. They're operating as a fraud. But
if they're an appointed official, they don't have oaths. I mean, there's a lot of departments.
Well, no. Everybody appointed has to have an oath too. Federal judges are all appointed. They have to have an oath. Anybody working for the government that has the authority of jurisdiction and is empowered with certain power. We're not talking about the bureaucrat that is working behind the desk.
Right. There's a lot of bureaucrats that don't have oaths.
Of course, they don't.
They're running certain departments, but they don't have any authority to do anything, really.
Right, but the thing is if you have a bureaucrat that's giving you a problem, you trace them up usually to a person who is appointed, a commissioner of some type, that will take care of that, you know, particular agency. So when an individual becomes elected, they're given certain powers to, bring people in, appoint individuals on this, to run this agency or that agency or another agency, whatever the authority and powers are within that particular elected positions. And so you go up the line. You go first, you go up to the person who's the commissioner or whoever is involved in orchestrating that particular agency that was appointed. And if they don't fix that problem, then you go to their boss. Their boss is the person who was elected that appointed them, because that's the guy you want to threaten. You want to go to the person that is the oath taker on the top that's elected, and you also the person that is appointed is also an oath taker. They have to take an oath, and they have to have a bond. They all have to have bonds, all of them. Why do they have to have bonds? They have to have bonds because they've been vested with certain powers that people don't have. They have a certain power, a certain authority, a certain jurisdiction, and they can execute those powers. And that's why they have to be bonded.
When they abuse that power.
Of course. Well, yeah, then you can pull the bond, yeah.
Right.
It's
protection for us.
Absolutely.
From them. And look, at the oath is so important. Just think about it like this. Would you want a president that didn't take an oath of office? You know, the one thing that makes our country different than other countries is we don't take an oath to a president or a man. We take an oath to God and the Constitution. That's different, and that's what's important. So you swear to uphold those ideals of the Constitution. And
well,
if you don't have an oath, then you didn't take your office.
If you don't have an oath and a bond or either or whatever, it's a house of cards, you know? I mean,
absolutely.
There's nothing to, you know, no structure to it. So
absolutely, and an oath is solemn. An oath, you can hold their feet to the fire, and that is will be. You can get justice in a court of justice. Unfortunately, there are no courts of justice in America today. At least I haven't found any yet, but we're still looking. But we do intend on getting there soon. But with that, we've got to move on.
Let me ask one last. I did think of one other thing, and that is sworn statement, should I include an endorsement statement where I swear everything in there is, you know, true and correct or whatever?
Well, no, on the top of your paper, I didn't look to see, but there should be usually what you have when the paper starts right under the heading, you'll have your county and then the name of the county, and then you'd have the state. So you'd have the state,
yeah.
And you'd have the county, and then the state underneath. And then to the right of that, you'll see SS, that sworn statement. And then on the bottom with the notary there, you're making a sworn statement, the necessary language that is in any kind of an affidavit, which seems to be what you have anyway. So that's it. That's a sworn statement. It's an affidavit form.
You don't think
I never communicate with any government agency without doing a sworn affidavit letter, all the time, certified, registered.
And when you're getting it notarized, as a sworn statement. They're not just notarizing your signature.
Oh, okay.
That's another way they do it. Look, you can get something notarized so that it's you signing it, but it's a different stamp she uses if it's a sworn statement. So the notary should ask you, did you do of your own volition? Is everything true and correct? You say yes. That's a sworn statement. That's what she's doing.
Okay.
And without a sworn statement, that it's true and correct.
And without a sworn statement, you can't even enter into a court of law. They do it all the time. The IRS does it. They don't have any sworn statement, no documentation, nothing. The government does this all the time. You know, they'll take you into court, and there is no documentation that's sworn to that brings you in there, and yet they overlook all that because they're under civil law that benefits those people in power. Okay, we got to move on. Thank you.
Okay.
And, when you get that, let's see how that letter goes through. Let me know, and we'll take it from there.
When I get it done and sent?
Well, after you send it, let's see how they respond. And you give them, 30 days or so, whatever. You know, let's see how they respond. You should get a response back within 30 days. So.
Yeah, I put a pretty strong statement in there as to, you know, them getting back to me. So.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Okay, let me move on.
Okay.
I'm going to pass things over to you in a minute, Gerard. You ready to do that? Take that?
And I just want to mention two things after you pass it to me, okay?
Okay.
Just real quick.
Okay, but let me introduce Brent first, or what do you want to do?
Let Gerard unload. He might burst.
Yeah, unload, yeah. Well, before he unloads, let me ask you a question. Lawyers are supposed to be officers of the court. Being officers of the court, logically speaking, you would think that they would be required to have a bond. Do bar attorneys have bonds?
Well, number one, all lawyers or all attorneys aren't bar attorneys because not every state requires that.
Right.
And then second, no, lawyers aren't required to be bonded. Now, in some states, I mean, I'm talking about attorneys that represent people before the court.
Mm-hmm.
Their responsibility and their loyalty is 100%, supposed to be by law, 100% to their client. Well, to the law, and then to their client. The law comes first. Not the court, not the legislature, but the law. That's why lawyers, like other officials of government, take an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic. And the reason they do that is because that's the, as Gerard pointed out a while ago, that's the ultimate loyalty, is to the law, not to any man or woman, or any combination of men or women. And that's, by the way, the oath that lawyers take and the oath that military privates and seamen deuces take and general officers and congressmen and state legislators, all those, that doesn't give any new duty to any of them. That only strengthens a duty that they already had as Americans. It's a duty we all have. If we're on this land, we're obligated under God to the law of the land. That's what God says, and that's what our Constitution recognizes when it calls itself the law of the land. So, but no, lawyers, bottom line, they're not bonded, but they're responsible to the clients foremost. A lot of lawyers take out insurance for errors and omissions, which is not a bond, but it's like a bond. The difference is this. Insurance policies, the insurance company pays the claim. But when you're bonded, the kind of bonds we're talking about, these surety bonds, the bonding company will pay the claim, but then they'll go after the individual that was bonded, the person that was the public official. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, the first bond that was required in America was under legislation in 1792, and I believe it had to do with treasurer of the United States. In other words, it started with officials, men, that handled money in the government. And they handled large amounts of money, and then legislation started appearing requiring them to be bonded. And then it spread kind of other things. But that's the foremost reason for bonding is people that handle a lot of money, well, they could, of course, the temptation to steal it's pretty huge. Mm-hmm. And that is the bonding company is to protect the public. But if they pay that claim, if somebody claims against a government official, the bonding company pays the claim. The official is the one that paid for the bond, or it could have been the government. But in either way, they're going to go after the official, the bonding company will, for the rest of the money. Usually the bond that is paid is from 1 to 5%. If the bond is $1 million, it would be $10,000 to $50,000, 1 to 5% of the total. So the bonding company, they're an actuarial, like an insurance company, and they figure, well, most of these won't have any claims against them anyway. Now, what I understand is, just state briefly, I understand what
well,
I hear.
They better brace for impact, I'll tell you that.
But say yeah, that again.
This website and these people with Bonds for the Win are really, really pushing this hard.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of people pulling, yeah. And we're teaching our people now the same thing, you know, the people that are creating the committees of safety within their counties. We want to teach them the same thing. So, yeah, uh-huh. They better brace for impact.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, you done there, Brent?
But if there's a complaint against a lawyer, there are other avenues. I'm done there, yeah.
I'd like to talk to you about that.
Gerard.
I want to do some more investigation, and I'll talk to you about that, what other possibilities with lawyers, how you can deal with them. But I'll tell you what, it's interesting if they call themselves officers of the court, that you would think at that point, because they're an officer of the court, you would think that they'd be required to be bonded. You know, I would think that. But, of course, they set the stage, and they're able to create the law and, you know, how that game goes. So, but, okay, I'm going to give things over to Gerard. And, Gerard, when you're done, you can introduce Brent and bring him on and take it from there, okay?
Okay. Give me the screen, too, for a minute.
Okay, got the screen. Okay, let me shut my screen off. Hey, you know what? Why don't you try taking it from me? See if you can share this way. If ever you didn't take the screen and you needed to take it and I'm not here or something, you could take it away. See if you take it out.
Remote.
Say, not, you know, taking it off.
Share screen. Hang on. All right, so...
It looks like I'm not sharing no more.
You know, you're not. I turned it off, but I'm not sure which screen. Let me see.
Okay, so you got control. So you can take it if I'm not at my computer sometime and you wanted to take it, you can take it then, right?
Yep.
It appears that way. Okay, good. All right. You got it.
Oh, how come I'm sharing your screen? That's weird. Here, let me fix this. Jeez.
Well, I see your screen. You got all your stuff up there. Well, you got a lot of junk on your desktop, huh?
I'll be quiet.
You know, you don't have to click the desktop. Just click what you want to share, and then down bottom there's a box already checked that will share. Anything you open up new, it'll automatically just share it.
Okay.
Yeah, my desktop used to look like that one day.
I need a new computer. It's so clogged up. Anyway. I don't know why it's not switching.
Well, I'm seeing a video up there getting ready to click the video button.
Oh, okay. You're seeing my video?
I'm seeing the video.
I'm seeing John Durash. How come I'm seeing you? That's weird.
I have no idea.
Let me see.
But the thing is it should be showing on your screen where you're going to be playing. You should be able to see it. And there was something I wanted to mention about that. Oh, yeah. Be careful because you can't shut your mic off. If you shut your, you can't mute yourself.
Right, I can't mute myself.
Right, because it plays off of the computer. But go ahead.
All right, let me...
I don't see the video no more.
How about now?
Yep, I see it now.
Okay, and I'm not
going
to...
Click that play button.
I'm not going to really play this long.
Oh,
this
SCT report. Is that the recent one? There was a pretty powerful one.
No, this is not a recent one. This is a...
He did a very powerful one recently. I'm trying to remember the subject matter, but go ahead.
Anyway, this has to do with medical kidnapping that's going on, and you have to be very careful about this. This is the picture of this fellow's truck that rolled his truck off the road in Arizona. All the windows broke out of it. This is a picture of his truck. It doesn't even look like the windshield broke, but he was stuck in the truck, but he wasn't injured. He had glass on his forehead. He was cut up, but he had no serious injuries. When the paramedics got there, they had to pry the door open, and before they pulled him out of the car, the one paramedic comes at him with a needle, you know, cuts his shirt off. And he comes out with a needle, and the guy goes, "No, no, what is that? I don't want that. What do you give me a needle for?" You know, but they gave it to him anyway, and it immediately knocked him out. They put him in a helicopter, and they flew him to Flagstaff Hospital. And, you know, these helicopter pads, they're on the top of the hospital. nobody sees them coming in. There's nobody watching over there, you know. So you go through these two metal doors. It doesn't even look like a hospital when you land on the helicopter pad. And they bring them down into this ICU place. Well, somehow he wakes up 8 hours later, and he's on a vent. They're pumping air in and out of his lungs. He's got a catheter in. He's got the vent in. He's got an IV in. He's looking around. There's nobody in the room. So first thing he does is pull the IV out, and he pulls the vent out of his throat. Imagine that.
Yeah, that must be painful.
Down into your lungs. He pulls it out of his throat. Then he slowly takes the IV out. He said, the worst part is me pulling the catheter out.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
And so he says, they cut my shorts off of my underwear. He said, I find my cut underwear, put it on to cover me, and I push through the doors, and there's three security guys, and there's like two nurses, and he goes, what the hell is going on? He said, why am I on this vent? And she goes, the one nurse that was doing the talking, who was the head girl there, and he said the two security guards were like kids. He said, you know, and this guy's like 50 years old, and he says, why do you have me on a vent? She goes, you have COVID. They tested him, and he came out positive. He said, even if I tested positive for COVID, a vent is a last stage thing. Why would you vent me? You see, he says, what's in that IV bag? He had to ask them like 50 times. And she told him, there's fentanyl, there's this, there's that. Because when they put you on a vent, they knock you out. They put you in a medically induced coma. Now, only by the grace of God did this guy wake up, because they obviously he didn't get enough stuff between the time they jabbed him and when they hooked the IV up, and he woke up and he unhooked himself. So she couldn't answer him why he was on a vent. There was absolutely no reason for him to be on a vent.
My question, if I was him, would have been, well, how do you know I had COVID? When I was in the car, that they had to
Tested. They run those PCR tests, and they run.
Yeah, but why would the guy knock him out at the site?
Because don't you understand? There's money to be made here. If they put them on a vent, they get a stipend.
I understand that, but the thing is the paramedic on the site where he's injured, you know, that putting them out didn't make any sense.
Because they got a plan going. There's kickbacks going on, John. Use your imagination. You're not criminal enough. That's what your problem is.
Yeah, I guess not. Yeah.
There's a conspiracy. There's a conspiracy going on, and I'm sure that the helicopter paramedics are getting a kickback from the hospital to deliver these people that they put on vents, and they never let them come off, and they kill them, and they get a $50,000 bonus for them dying on a vent, and they probably give them a shot of remdesivir like they did my sister, and that's another $5,000 and blah, blah, blah. So what I'm telling you is you got to be real careful if you end up in the hospital, because they've sold their soul for money. And this guy, this video here is where he talks about what they did to him and how he woke up and how he ended up walking out of the hospital against medical advice. She said, we're not going to let you go unless you can urinate. And Stu Peters does the interview. It's really good. Maybe we can put the I don't want to.
How long is this video?
It's like 20-something minutes here. Let me see.
That's kind of long.
It is. No, it's 17 minutes, but it's still too long. We already don't have enough time.
Yeah, you got people.
I'm going to play the first 7 minutes, okay?
Okay.
And
all right. Well, you got the controls. I'm going to mute myself out
can go to SGT report, and put hospital vents car, and you can get this video, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's on Brighteon. All right.
Okay. Play the video, then put Brent in, and then finish off.
This is something that you need to worry about. The other thing that I want to tell people, let's see here. Is it? Wait a minute. This one here. This is another Brighteon, and this is about them using the swabs they're using. And there's stuff on. They found out that they're medicating people with these swabs, and that there's these little discs in there that was designed from a parasite that goes in and clamps onto your intestine. Well, they've created this thing in nanotechnology. It's as big as a grain of dust. You can't really make it out with the naked eye. This is it. This is it here in its open form. And it has a paraffin based.
Looks painful.
Well, what happens is when the body, when it goes in the body, like they're sticking these swabs up your nose, so it's going to go down your throat, it's going to go into your alimentary canal, it's going to go into your intestines. When it gets warm enough, it's this open thing like this. This is how it goes in. It closes and it clamps on to the intestinal wall, the stomach wall, the intestinal wall. And in the top of this is a dose of whatever it is they want to give you. And they can release millions of these into your body on one swab. So, and this was something that was developed by John Hopkins, Anthony Fauci, all these angels of death working on this stuff.
So these swabs that they're using for testing, I heard that they're putting things in there already. So this is what they're putting in there.
My daughter had to take a test every so many days, like three
days. Yeah, I wouldn't even take those tests.
And, well, I told her, don't use their swabs. So apparently the message got out because they gave them home test kits. And when you get these kits, when you open the box, the swabs are wrapped in like a Band-Aid, like in a paper wrapping. Turn it over and look at it. And there's usually a little circle up on the top. And if it has, they can have what they call ethylene oxide is what they sterilize them with. Well, if you go in and look up in poison control, you look up ethylene oxide, it is not something you want in your body. It's got so many horrible effects. They should not, and they're made in China. Where else are they made?
Mm-hmm.
And they're sterilized in ethylene oxide. That's in addition to these nanobots that they have on them. See, it may not have nanobots, but they have. If it says ethylene oxide, you're poisoning yourself, and it's leaving you open to catch anything. It's leaving you open to catch the COVID out in the wild because it immediately ruins your immune system. So my daughter got a home test kit, and on hers, it said, no ethylene oxide, no extra this and that. They disclaimed everything. So, in other words, people are finding out, and there's American companies that are making them that are clean. So you want to make sure that you get a tab, you know, if they're requiring you to take tests, you want to make sure that you get something without ethylene oxide. But the other thing is I don't know how you...
Ethylene oxide is one of the items. Is there anything else that,
on? No, ethylene oxide, they put a disclaimer on, but they didn't put a disclaimer about these nanobots. And so I don't know what to tell you. I would bring my own swabs in. I wouldn't use theirs.
I was just going to say, use your own Q-tips.
Yeah,
you can get swabs I'm sure you can buy them, swabs that have been sterilized by some process for general
use. Right, well, the ones that they gave them were sterilized by a process, and it said no ethylene, no this and that. So obviously there's enough scuttlebutt out there that they've responded. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just blowing the warning whistle. So, and these companies have worked on bioweapons. Fauci and Pfizer and all of them, they're all working on bioweapons. This was all,
All right. Well, I'm gonna mute out right now. If you're gonna play this video, go ahead and pick
up. Wait a minute. I'm gonna play. What am I gonna play here? No, not that one. I'm sorry. This one. Just listen to this really quickly.
I'm having problems hearing this.
You can't hear me?
Hold on. I've got to lower my thing. Yeah, I had to put my volume up super loud to hear anything. Will you hear it?
Hang on. Let me see if I can...
Were you hearing it on your side okay?
Wait a minute.
There's no volume, John. Gerard, there's no volume.
Okay, let's try this.
Hey, friends. Sean from SGT reporting. This
is that better?
Extremely low volume.
Really?
It's way in the background.
That is weird. What's going on with this thing? Okay. I think last time I had this problem, I had to do this work around here, which was this. Hang on.
Hello?
Yeah, we're still not getting no volume. You might want to bypass this. Why don't you pick this up next week, and we'll play around with it, make sure you get volume. I'll see what I could do on my end.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's let me just do one more thing before I give up. Let's see.
Nothing. Yeah, you're going to want to give up on this one tonight. Pick it up for next week. Rod, are you there?
Hello?
Okay, we can hear you now.
Can you hear me? Okay, yep. I'm going to introduce Brent since my time got burned up here. Okay, so we got Brent Waiting in the Winds, the author of Excellence of the Common Law.
Excellence of the Common Law, yep.
And he's going to do some comments here as he does every week. So take it away, Brent.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate both of you, and I appreciate you letting me get on and say a few words. My comments are my own, as always, and I'll take responsibility for them. But also, if I lose signal, I'm traveling in a vehicle as I speak. If I lose signal, then somebody just take over. It could happen. But I wanted to mention something that I've been looking at. I spend my time with my nose in the books and the law. Of course, I hold on good evidence that the Bible is the best law book we've got. It's the most accessible, the most widely known, and it has the most dignity as a matter of reputation among men. And it has never been shown anywhere, although people constantly have doubts about it. It's never been shown to be untrue at any point. And I'm working in Psalm 19, the 19th Psalm. 19th Psalm divided into two parts, the first seven verses and then the last, first six verses and the last eight verses. It's just 14 verses long. The first six verses talk about the laws of nature, which we now take a slice of that to be our common law. And then the last eight verses talk about the Bible. Our Declaration of 76, of course, references both of these, laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. Those are the two volumes of our fundamental law that have been recognized since the beginning by Americans. Well, it says in the first part of that,
we're losing him bad. I don't know if everybody else having a problem, but
I think you need to give up on Brent. I don't think we're going to get the message.
It's organized to the IT, every word. Hoha, you take over, please.
Brent.
Is Gerard there? Yeah.
Brent, we can't hear you. You're out more than you're in right now. You've been out for a minute and a half. Hello, Brent? Brent.
Yeah. Okay.
Hang on here. Let me...
Yeah, you're going to
go
on.
Go ahead. Hang on, I don't seem to.
I think he's saying go ahead and take over and go with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm going to stop him here because All right. So, anyway, we have only two commenters in the queue. I'm going to go ahead and unmute Heather Lee from Michigan. Go ahead, Heather Lee. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. And my question, actually, it was inclusive of John earlier, Bonds for the Win. I am working on utilizing those bonds in another area and the against another different official, and John was mentioning that he was going to look into utilizing it against the judges, which I'm very interested in, because I have a couple of hand-picked judges. I'd like to bond them, take their bonds, that's for sure. But I thought I'd start a little smaller with the county treasurer because of the unlawful land tax in the land grab that they have been siphoning from we the people for years. And I thought maybe I could maybe recruit a little help from John, if that was ever possible. Or even you, Gerard. You are very on it and to procure something juicy against the other elected officials that are the super pirates of the county, and that would be most certainly the treasurer. And so anyway, that's my request. And I also have another question, and I have put it forth toward to the founder of Bonds for the Win. I had sent the question in on their website, and that was for, and you might be able to say something about it, Gerard. Private schools, they call themselves private, okay, but yet they're large enough, so you know that even though they're private, if they're a 501c3, this particular school is actually also a school of theology. And but they have another division, and they're all, it's open to the public, okay? And they've grown, and but they have a curriculum that they changed, which is not constitutional, and I plan on going against them. A particular instructor, she's introduced some of the same rhetoric that the public schools have. Now, a large private school, and I think the only large private school in the whole United States that is private, 100%, is Hillsdale in Michigan here. And so that leads me to believe that any other school that purports that they're private, that they're first of all, they're bonded, and secondly, they're open to the public, and thirdly, if they're a theological school along with another part of a type of school, they most certainly are 501c3. So that means that they're open to the government, and also not that they're not taking funding from the back door, through the back door, from the state or the federal, other than private. So I'm kind of reaching out into the outer perimeters with this, other than what they're using those bonds for right now, and that, you know, for the schools, the elementary schools, and for the children. But I'd like to venture into some of these other areas. I've read the letters, the template letters that have been written for Bonds for the Win. And there's a number of bonds in there that she lists. They've listed all the different kinds of bonds. And I would think for a private school, do you concur with that, Gerard, that there is not any truly private schools in the United States except for Hillsdale?
Well, I don't know if there are or there aren't, but, you know, especially if they're a they're a certain religious school, you know, where they can claim they're private and they don't have to accept people that are not of that faith, let's say. So they're technically not open to the public, but they all have a problem, and they're all ignorant to that problem, and you named it. And the problem is the 501(c). And even the churches have problems because they thought that it was not a big deal. Well, it is a big deal. Because you can't look at, if you're going to be a fiction of the state, how do you serve two masters? Because
that's
basically
right.
what that 501(c) says is you're going to do their rules and regulations, which basically that's how they end up telling the preachers that you can't preach this or that from the pulpit, because they'll pull your 501(c), and then they'll go back years and they'll say you're a scam, and they'll charge you back taxes, so they'll put you out of business, basically. So they have them by the short hairs, and it's kind of a blackmail extortion thing. But look, at any private school or church should not have a 501(c). They don't need it. It's all about greed. The government put the carrot on the stick, and see, a church doesn't have to pay tax. A religious school or a private school doesn't have to pay tax. They have a different, it's not a 501, it's like a 700 or something, because religious organizations are automatically exempt due to the Constitution. They cannot charge them taxes, and they cannot tell them what to do. But what the government said is, like, look, if you get this 501(c), then when your parishioners give you money, we'll let them write off a certain percentage of it. You know what I mean? So what ends up happening is big businesses love that 501(c) because it gives them a write-off that lowers their income, that saves them more money in the end. And technically they're not giving to the church, they're giving to themselves. If they're a 501(c) and they really want to tithe, they got to give an additional 10% to the church, because what's happened is the government stepped in the middle, and the government's the one that's giving the benefit. But, of course, along with that, you're taking the control. You're signing off your control. You're serving two masters, and you're really only serving one, because you're going to do whatever the government tells you. And I'll tell you what, if you ever look at the forms that a 501(c) has to fill out, it's ridiculous. It's worse than your income tax. They want to know how many pairs of underwear you got in your drawer. I mean, I'm not kidding. You know what I mean? I can't believe that they put up with it. And even these conservative churches that were always good, it's really bad. They need to get rid of their 501(c) because it's a tool of the devil. I'm sorry. And it was done just like these hospitals are taking money to kill people. The churches are getting extra money God said, what do you worry about what you eat or drink or what you wear and clothe? They'll do fine without it. They don't need it. But they think they need it because they got fat and happy. They even give them – the Catholic Church is the worst, and I can say that because I was raised Catholic. They get the most benefits. They even administer government programs. They administer the government milk and cheese program and all this, Catholic Charities. Mm-hmm. They are so tied in with the government – they are a government agency as far as I'm concerned.
Saint Vincent de Paul, I know it.
So, and the other thing I was going to tell you, and I don't want to take too much time. As far as the land taxes going, they got lots of problems, lots of problems that you don't even know about that I could tell you about. And I'll tell you here in this county and probably in all of New York State, and I'm willing to bet that in most of the country that they got the same problem. Ever since they went onto this in rem program for taking property, the state legislators told the towns and the counties that you can use this in rem program to confiscate property, and that it makes it much easier, and it removes all the, you know, people will buy the tax defunct properties better because there's no redemption period, you know, and so it makes it very lucrative for them to come in, and they don't have to worry about the people coming back and paying the taxes and losing their I lost my controls.
Their investment, yeah.
Right.
That they put the money down for.
So what they did was, they said you can use this thing. They sent a resolution that they had made a resolution that they can use this, but there was a couple of caveats in order to use that particular, which I believe is illegal. The fact that they made this in rem thing, which brings it into complete admiralty, you know, no due process whatsoever.
Right.
But what happened is the towns were supposed to make a law saying that that's what they were going to do. And I've discovered that none of them made the law. That
oh,
they're
goody.
Doing, that they're doing it completely illegally. And
oh, beautiful.
See, the trouble is, and you got to see, because when they make a law, they have to report it to the State Department. It should be on file. What you're going to find is the reason that that the state didn't do it is because they understood that it was unconstitutionally illegal. So they did just like the governors do with the mandates. Oh, we'll leave it up to the businesses. We'll leave it up to the towns. Well, everybody's dropped the ball. This is a major, major thing when I get some time, I'm going to pull it in. And you know what? I can help you. You'll pull the cord on this stuff.
I'm on Skype, Gerard. Just talk to me. You can see me stuff.
Yeah. So that's just a basic coverage of that.
Fantastic. I heard of NREM, but I didn't know all those little dicey details, and I appreciate that.
It's worse than you can even imagine.
Oh my gosh, I can kind of imagine. I've been fighting this county for a long time, and I plan on taking them down.
They're doing so many things that are not right. They don't care. They're above the law as far as they're concerned.
They got their CAFR funds, and that's all
that's
they care
right.
about.
Yeah, that's another thing, the CAFR funds. We haven't even talked about that, but
yeah.
That's a whole another okay. big boondoggle in there.
Well, just Skype me and send me anything that you have on that. I like to get real educated on it.
Listen, I sued them for my land taxes, and I was a little bit more naive back then, but we had a great case. I read the real property tax, and if you read the definition of real property, it's not my property. It's not my property. I don't have dockage and wharfage. It's the same thing that the IRS does in their code.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, you know, you're dealing alcohol and tobacco and all that. That's not you. And their real property is not you either.
No.
But when you go down and you put your property, you let the tax assessor put a value on your property. What you're doing is you're agreeing to have it taxed, and then you're helped to it.
Yeah, it's that stinking assessor. I know it. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Well, she doesn't even know. They don't even know what they're doing. They're just
she has a job. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I don't blame that. Blame the particular assessor because they've been trained that this is the truth. And you know, even these sheriffs that don't have bonds, they don't know that they're that municipal bond, that blanket bond. The lawyer told them it would cover him. That's bad advice from the lawyer. He should sue the lawyer. He should arrest the lawyer for giving him that advice.
Everybody's going to be sued in the end.
It's gonna be a real storm. It's gonna be a real poop storm. Let me tell you why.
Well,
anyway,
I plan on getting in the middle of it. So,
anyway, I sued them, and what they told me was, see, with this NREM process, they convert your deed to the county.
Yeah.
So when they're done with you, you don't own it, and when the sheriff comes, they kick you out as a scofflaw tenant of your house. That's how they do it. And so what the attorney told me, he said, you know, if you go through this and you lose this case, they pushed me out to the end of the time so that they already were in the process of converting my deed. He said, so the minute that judge's hammer comes down, you lose, you lost your house. You don't own it. He says, why don't you pay the taxes and then you can come back and sue us you know, after you pay the taxes. So I didn't want to.
I'm right there right now, Gerard. I come to this.
At the last minute. I paid them at the last minute, and you know what he did? The lawyer made a motion to the judge that since the taxes are paid, the case is moot. Dismiss it. That's what they did. They tricked me. You understand?
Oh, that's scum.
Yeah. So I just to give you a little bit of my experience, but anyway, I can give you. You can look at my case. I can give you my case. There's so much good stuff in it, and I really wanted to redo it, but I've been waiting, and I'm glad I waited because we got. You know, this was maybe 3 years ago or 4 years ago. We got a lot more information than we had then. Okay.
Well, I have just quickly. I have a couple of things coming at them, and one of the things is. I'm going for an extension. At the very same time, I'm coming around the backside with a letter that's so constitutional that it'll make their head spin. And then if I get the extension first, see, then I'm going to rip them a new one. And then on the backside, if I can get that extension for a year, I'm already contracted with Ron Gibson to go after him for the land patent. I already have the land patent. I just didn't file it right. So
right.
I'm going to get them from every direction. So, okay, send me your information. I'd love to have it.
We should keep in contact and share information because this is good. Okay. We got like 9 minutes. I'm going to open. Thank you, Heather Lee, by the way.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Okay.
Blessing.
Yeah.
We'll be in touch.
Yeah. Bye-bye. And now we got Ross open. Go ahead, Ross.
I'm just taking the jury administrator course.
Yeah.
After that, my mother said, "Oh, it's probably no position will be open for you to fill that position."
That what's not gonna say that again? That's what's not. There's not gonna be a position open. I don't understand.
Okay.
Why is there not gonna be a position open?
Because a lot of people, like my sister-in-law, says, "Oh, they really have a jury consultant in that position."
I don't understand what you're saying.
You're
taking the administrator's course, so the grand the jury administrator is somebody that who administrates to the grand jury.
Yes.
Right? And picks the juries and wardays the juries and gives them an education on what they're supposed to be doing and what their job is. So why does your mother or whoever it is think that position's not going to be there?
It's because doesn't matter if I get that all those qualifications to be a jury administrator that they're saying... Clackamas County will never hire me.
It's not going to. You see, what you don't understand is that they will not. The counties will no longer be in control of that. It will be we, the people, and we have set ourselves up so that we will be in control of that. We've already set the standards. Look, there's a German lawyer that sued Deutsche Bank and Volkswagen. And he has a license in Germany and in California. And it's Heimich Fulmer. And he now is running a common law grand jury mock trial. So he's calling it mock, quote unquote. He wants to open up Nuremberg 2, the second Nuremberg trials. But before he does that, he's going through all the evidence against Pfizer and Fauci and all of them, and he's doing it in this trial, and he's got a real judge that they fired because he stood up to the cops. And so he's got a real judge sitting there, very, very professional, and he's doing this trial, and he's bringing out the real evidence to the grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
And Fulmer calls it's going in the court of public opinion. Well, by the time he gets done doing this trial, they're going to be calling for these guys to be hung, and he'll have no trouble opening up Nuremberg 2. In the same token, we're doing the same thing. we have instituted this common law grand jury in every county in the United States. We're going to be almost 10 years into it, and they're going to be looking for grand jurors, and we're going to hand them the whole program. So we're going to be in. There's no reason for us not to be in control. We're getting people in position now. We're having people run for committee man and all this other stuff. So can I guarantee it? No, but it's going to. I think it's a pretty good chance that we will be that mover and shaker in that place. And if you got your qualification as a grand jury administrator, they're going to fight over you because other people are not going to have that. And before you know it, counties and towns are going to say, oh, well, you got to have this qualification that was written by NLA, because we're going to become the premier experts as far as who people go to for knowledge and figuring out what's going on. We're going to be the experts. We've set ourselves up for that already. We already know more about it than the average person in any town or municipality. So we're pretty confident that we'll be in the driver's seat. So that's what it's about. You don't have to worry about the county hiring you or whatever, because I think if you have that qualification, you'll be able to walk into any town or any county, you know.
Mhm. So that's what my mom is saying was, it doesn't guarantee, says she doesn't realize it's not the county hiring you.
No, it does not guarantee that the county is hiring you. I agree. That's 100% true. There is no guarantee. But what I'm telling you is that the country is ripe for this now. There's been so much corruption, and we have to get back to real juries and untainted grand juries. And who's in position in America to do that? Only one group I know. That's right.
Yes.
So I think your chances are pretty good. And look, it's not going to hurt you to get that. I mean, it's not going to hurt you to take that course. It'll only help you. And you get a certificate when you're done. And I would think that there's going to be more chances for employment as time goes on than less. You know, even lawyers are going to have to re-educate themselves in common law, because they're not going to be able to run to these statutes, you know, if they don't know common law, because it won't hold up in court. You know, a common law lawyer will come in and whip the pants off of them. So anyway, that's another thing. Hey, you can become a common law lawyer. You don't have to be a bar lawyer. You look at Jefferson and them, those people, they were self-taught. And they became lawyers. You know what I mean?
The county is the one still has to pay the salary for the jury administrator.
Say that again. I had trouble hearing you. Kind of broke up. Go ahead again.
I was saying, does the county pay your salary?
Yes, the county will pay your salary because. We're going to be in a position to say we want Ross as the grand jury administrator, and we've already recommended what those salaries should be. But that money is going to come out of the taxpayers that they're collecting already for those services. We're going to have access to those funds as the grand jury administrators, as the grand jury what do you call somebody that comes in and gives you advice? They call them what? There's a name. I'm having a senior moment.
The consultant or an oversight committee.
That's right, a consultant. We're the consultants to the grand jury, and pretty much we're going to be the accepted experts in that. So, yes, the short answer is you're going to be paying out of taxpayers' funds, no doubt about it. Okay. I mean, certainly you're not going to get paid out of NLA funds.
No, you guys don't have enough money to pay for that.
No, I wish we did, but we don't. But anyway, that's the story. So, you know, whether you believe it or not, that's up to you. And I think any time that you can educate yourself and get good education, especially on common law and things on tradition and all this stuff that we're doing, that it won't hurt you.
Mm-hmm. And that The certificates are $20.
Oh, I don't know anything about that. I guess that's not my pay grade. I haven't kept up with that. But I don't know. Is that what they're saying? It's $20.
I'm just asking because John Pyle not on right now.
Just send an email, Ross, to mail@nationalalliance and ask that question. And someone
right.
Okay.
We'll answer you.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna close now. It's 11 o'clock. We're actually gonna make it tonight. I want to thank everybody for coming and
yeah.
And we got listen. Next week we'll pick up the loose ends on what we left here. Some other untied ends. I didn't get to play my videos, and I think it's important for people to become educated and informed on some of those things that can be life-saving. You know. Anyway, have a good night, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for making the show a success.